Hui Zhong, a senior disciple of Hui Nung, old Buddha Cao Qi, the sixth ancestor, was a great teacher of humans and devas. Clarify his essential teaching and make it a standard for study. He was a great teacher. Because he pointed out how various teachings and interpretations of mind itself is Buddha are nothing other than a teaching of Seneca, as we heard this morning. And before we finish with the section on Hui Zhong, he had a little bit more to say about mind itself as Buddha, naturally. A monk asked, "What is Buddha?" as monks are prone to do. And the national teacher, Hui Zhong, said, mind itself is Buddha, as national teachers are prone to do. And the monk asked, "Does mind have defilements? Mind that is itself Buddha?" This seems like an excellent clarifying question that we might even have at this time, having looked at this teaching over and over. Does this mind that is itself Buddha have defilements? Is this ordinary mind, the mind that attaches to things and picks and chooses things over other things, and gets upset with things, and gets proud about things, and gets discouraged and encouraged, all sorts of myriad 108,000 defilements of mind? But is this the mind that is itself Buddha? And the national teacher, Hui Zhong, said, "Defilements by their own nature drop off. And the monk asked, "Do you mean that we shouldn't cut them off?" This is the second bodhisattva vow. Delusions is our maybe somewhat milder translation of this term, bono, bono mujin se gandan. Bono is literally klesha. It's the Chinese way of saying klesha, or afflictions. So a literal translation of our second bodhisattva vow would really be like, afflictions and defilements are endless. I vow to se gandan, cut them off. So this may be referring to, you know, does the mind have these bono, and do you mean that we shouldn't cut off the bono like our bodhisattva vow says? And the national teacher said, cutting off defilements is called the second vehicle. When defilements do not arise, that is called nirvana. This dialogue, I personally deeply appreciate, and maybe it's just because it's the third day of Sesshin, things become more deeply appreciable. But this is similar to the discussion yesterday. About not having to empty things out because they're already empty. And there was another way it was put too that's escaping me right now. That I think that the Buddha said to Shrenika at some point. It's a practice of non-practice. It's non-cultivation. It's non-doing. So this dialogue again, a monk asked, "What is Buddha?" And Hui Zhong said, "Mind itself is Buddha." And to clarify this phrase, as we are also making effort to do, the monk continues, "Does this mind have defilements? Does this mind have afflictions? Does this mind have what we call all these unwholesome states of mind based on delusion coming forth from misunderstanding of the nature of things?" And the national teacher said, "Defilements by their own nature drop off." So instead of saying yes or no, "Does mind have defilements?" he could have said, "Yes, it does, and this is how to practice with them." Or he could have said, "No, it doesn't," but he simply said, "Defilements by their own nature drop off," because it's a little bit like neither yes nor no. We could say the mind has defilements, but by their own nature they drop off, or could translate it as defilements by their own nature are dropped off. In other words, we don't do it, the dropping, just like body and mind dropping off. A body and mind of their own nature, by their own nature, drop off.
What would be the
nature of defilements? The true nature of defilements?
Impermanent.
What?
It's not permanent.
Not permanent. And
empty.
Impermanent, empty defilements, which is the case, right? When we stop to look, is the true nature of defilements. So therefore, by their defilements, by their impermanent, empty nature, drop off of their own accord. Moment to moment, impermanent defilements. Of course, new ones arise, but they drop off too. And so this is why we could say that emptiness is a little more thoroughgoing than impermanence in terms of dropping off by their own nature, because we might feel that, well, the defilements do drop off impermanently, and then there another one arises dependent on the dropped off one, and then that one drops off, and then another one arises. But this could go on and on. But if they're empty from the start, if they're empty of independent existence, then even while they impermanently arise and cease, that very arising is non-arising. Their empty nature is that they actually, defilements don't arise, which is the same principle as birth and death and samsara is itself nirvana by its own nature. Samsara by its own nature drops off, revealing its natural state of nirvana. Does that ring true to to our, at least to our conceptual minds. I mean, it's as strange and deep as conceptual concepts get. But what may be just about as liberating as conceptual concepts get, I would propose. Yes.
So you started, you said this morning, and you started by talking about practicing, not practicing, or not doing.
Yeah.
So would this, could it also be said, practice by its own nature drops off?
Practice by its own nature drops off.
Or
yeah.
Everything.
Yeah. Yeah. So, which doesn't mean that defilements don't appear.
Yeah.
Certainly. And practice doesn't appear.
Mm-hmm.
As the sixth ancestor said, it's not that there's no practice and realization, it's just that they can't be defiled by non-emptiness.
I'm just delving, you know, practice and realization are one. So
that, yeah, practice,
it's essentially really saying the same thing.
Practice and realization are one, and practice and realization can't be defiled, but it's not that they don't appear.
Mm-hmm.
And mind and defilements similarly can't be defiled. Well, mind can't be defiled, defilements can't be defiled, and by their own nature they drop off. And I don't know if this is the same Datsu Raku that Dogen talks about, but it's a wonderful image of not that they disintegrate or something like that, but they drop off. Or they have dropped off, or they are continuously dropping off. Body and mind are dropping off by their own nature. definitely applies to Dogen's body and mind drop off. It's not something, okay, like we're gonna do, body and mind are gonna drop off now. How are we gonna do that? Well, we got to do it with the body and the mind, right? So let's get the body lined up for dropping off. Line it up so when we drop off, it goes straight down. And get the mind all ready to go. Ready, drop. It's more like they've dropped off from the start. They're dropping off by their own nature all the time. And the Dogen, when he heard that phrase, he understood the natural dropping off moment to moment of body and mind. So how wonderful, I think, that the monk says, to clarify even more fully, like he almost like in disbelief, do you mean that we shouldn't cut off defilements? Cut through them, eliminate them in some way? And the national teacher answers, instead of saying, no, don't bother, or something like that, he says, it implies that it is a practice. It is called the second vehicle. The second vehicle, as opposed to the one vehicle. The second vehicle, or like the second method. When defilements do not arise, that is called nirvana. And, of course, that doesn't mean like when you finally get to the point where you can keep them down so they don't arise, it's a little bit funny to say when, because when is right now, when is always. Maybe we could say, as defilements do not arise, that's called nirvana. The fact that defilements do not arise is called nirvana. Realization that don't arise is called the realization of nirvana, but defilements are naturally in the state of nirvana, according to the great vehicle, first vehicle, one vehicle. So finally, there's some actual practice instruction, direct and straightforward about practicing this very mind as Buddha. We are now at the point in the fascicle too where Dogen's going to now step forward and present his own teaching. So this whole first half so far, he's just been quoting Seneca and other Zen people's views that are similar to Seneca. So Dogen says, mind itself is Buddha, which has been maintained by Buddha ancestors, is not something those outside the way or practitioners of the two lesser vehicles can even dream of. Two lesser vehicles are Shravaka and Pratyeka Buddha vehicle. Do you know about these? Often mentioned in Mahayana sutras, like the Lotus Sutra is really big on these two particular lesser vehicles that aren't the Bodhisattva or the one vehicle. Both versions of something like an arhat. Shravakas are the Buddha's means hearers, literally, listeners, and it's the Buddha's disciples who have heard the Buddha's teaching, heard the Buddha's lesser vehicle teaching, and awaken to it. And then the Pratyeka Buddhas are the self-awakened Buddhas. So interestingly, they're called Buddhas, awakened ones, but they're awakened by conditions as opposed to hearing, and they awaken on their own.
Sorry, they are awakened by conditions.
Pratyeka is similar to that word pratyaya and praticca, conditions or dependencies. They're awakened by conditions other than a teacher, maybe one way to say it. Or they're awakened to conditionality, but on their own. I think the main point is Pratyeka Buddhas, they're independent realizers. Sometimes how it's translated, independent realizers, Pratyeka Buddhas. And so these get, and I think these were terms from early Buddhism that the Mahayana picked up on and kind of talks about them kind of critically. Although early Buddhism, they weren't talked of about critically. I think they talk about the Savaka Sangha in Pali, which is the Shravaka Sangha, and with great praise, like the Buddha's disciples. But in the Mahayana, they're not bodhisattvas. They're not practicing for the complete awakening of all living beings. They don't have this vast, expansive intent. I think it's Robert Thurman who translates it. The Mahayana, the great vehicle, Bodhisattva vehicle, as the messianic vehicle, like Messiah, which is like savior. Does Messiah mean savior? So like messianic, maybe a kind of loaded term.
Except it knows it's impossible.
Yes. So basically, this is just standard Mahayana criticism of false views. You know, it doesn't even—it's not only It's something that those outside the Buddha way and these Shravakas and Pratika Buddhas couldn't even dream of. Only Buddha ancestors together with Buddha ancestors have been actualizing and penetrating mind itself as Buddha. And so this is, now Dogen's going to do his common technique of basically weaving in all kinds of little like bits and pieces from Zen stories and sutras woven into his Dogen-esque dialogue in a very beautiful way. And I often wonder, you know, there's so many of these very obscure sometimes references just like woven throughout his discourse that, you know, did people in Dogen's time that he was practicing with, had they like studied all these Zen records so much that they were like, oh, cool, he's bringing up this one? Or was it just that Dogen had studied all these things and he just thought that would be fun to do? and it kind of went past people. I don't know. I kind of think maybe the latter, because Zen was brand new in Japan. These texts like the Koan collections and commentaries, you know, weren't in Japan. And Dogen actually brought, according to the story, the first copy of the Blue Cliff record to Japan. They say he copied the night before he left China. He thought, wait, before I go, maybe I should like bring back some of these treasures. And so he copied it up by hand, and you know, with it's, you know, hundreds of pages, and they say that some like deities helped him. So, but having, you know, having these references now to these Zen stories, it's, I really, the more and more reading Dogen, more and more I feel like he's just this incredible genius and character and poet, and like he's really playing with language a lot, and I think I picture him having a really good time writing this stuff, although it's, you know, I'm sure it took some time and effort to really put it together. So this is where he's starting to get into this now. Only Buddha ancestors together with Buddha ancestors is a reference to the Lotus Sutra, where in chapter 2 the Lotus Sutra says only a Buddha together with a Buddha can realize the true marks of all things, something like that, like suchness. And Dogen has a fascicle called Only a Buddha Together with a Buddha. And so here he just put in ancestors together. Whenever we see Buddha ancestors, you know, it could be translated as also as Buddhas and ancestors. Only Buddhas and ancestors together with Buddhas and ancestors have been actualizing and penetrating mind itself as Buddha. So, and this follows right after this part about these individual illuminators. So it's something kind of like communal and transmissional that may be being implied here, that it's not, there's something being passed along from one to another. Buddha ancestors together with other Buddha ancestors actualizing and penetrating mind, it's Buddha. Thus, it has been heard, practiced, and realized. And now Dogen's going to do this thing that is not apparent in this translation, but he's going to, in the Japanese, it's actually set up like this one line for each of the words in Soku Shin Zeibutsu. So there's basically well, you probably can't see it from here, but he breaks it down into four kind of verse lines, and each line begins one butsu soku ze shin. So it's a little bit different order, and it'd be nice if this translation put it that way, because I think it's a little commentary on each character. So starting thus, Buddha's 100 blades of grass, it starts with Buddha. So I say, Buddha's 100 blades of grass have been taken up. They have been made to disappear. So to clarify Buddha in Soku Shinsei Butsu, 100 blades of grass is a Zen way of saying everything. The myriad grasses are all things. You look at a field of grass and there's just like all these individual pieces of grass and uncountable. So just a poetic way of saying everything. So Buddha's 100 blades of grass have been taken up and they've been made to disappear. Or we could translate it as Buddha is 100 blades of grass being taken up and disappearing. So clarifying Buddha here seems to be I could take that image to be like everything, the phenomenal world, everything is taken up and disappears into vast emptiness. This is Buddha. Taken up and disappearing. However, this cannot be explained as the 16-foot golden body. Ooh, be careful. It looks like it might be about to fall. It's kind of like the edge is a little bit... you might want to pull it down or something. It's just it's holding my... By the way, while we're fixing this window, when it fell during Zazen very loudly with a sudden crash, and it was the moment of Zazen, that period, that I most appreciated, personally. The moment of Zazen that I most appreciated, it was really, I was kind of like, and I'm like, and then a moment afterwards I thought, oh, is this like mind itself is Buddha? That thought arose as soon as that fell, because for this moment there was like whatever kind of like hazy, wandering thoughts for 1 second were like completely disappeared. The 100 grasses of my mind for 1 second disappeared in the sound, suddenly cleared, and then the next thought is like, mind itself is Buddha, and it started going again. And I thought, this is kind of like the, we don't use the practice of the Kyosaku in Santa Cruz Zen Center, the stick.
Thank you.
We throw window shades.
Yes, we spontaneously program them to fall.
Always a secret Kyosaku and everything.
Yeah. Just the sound of sudden suddenness is, I think the Kyosaku technique is partly to nudge people awake, but it creates this sharp, sharp sound for everybody in the room. So, and has this effect of like the thought streams are temporarily interrupted again and again. This cannot be explained as a 16-foot golden body, which is another Zen term, maybe a sutra term, of the grand imagination of the perfect Buddha. 16-foot golden body, like the idealized Buddha, we could say, idealized in our mind. So Buddha is 100 blades of grass, all the phenomenal world taken up and disappearing. This is not the 16-foot golden body of our idealized imagination. It's one way to read this commentary on Buddha. The next paragraph, this is Soku, the translation of immediately or, here and now is Soku. Right? So
making the same point at the end of the paragraph. He may have begins repeating the same point in a different way.
You mean the 16-foot golden body?
Well, he starts out by saying, hey, you know, these lesser vehicle people, they're individual, what did you say? They're outside, they're individual illuminators, they're really people who...
They can't dream of...
divisionality.
Mm-hmm.
So they're essentially not practicing with the bodhisattva vow or the expansive intent.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, but really, Buddha ancestors, together with Buddha ancestors, it's not an individual thing.
Mm-hmm.
And in this non-individual way, the 100 blades of grass have been taken up and made to disappear. However, it's not this idealized way. Is he essentially just repeating the same point in a different way?
Similar, related. And I think it's particularly bringing up, we could say, Buddha is like, you know, form and emptiness and their non-duality. The 100 blades of grass is the whole world of form, the disappearance of the world of form into emptiness. And just, you know, all the 100 grasses of everything, as opposed to like Buddha is like this 16-foot golden body with its beaming light that will save us from and will, you know, will cut through our afflictions that are really deeply embedded in this, our mind stream. so this, or immediately, this very itself is the fundamental point which does not wait for actualization. And so this is a translation of this is the koan which does not wait for genjo. And this term, genjo koan, is the name of an earlier fascicle, but also Dogen uses throughout the Shobo Genzo, uses the terms genjo koan. It's one of his favorite terms to mean the full flowering of awakening, which in the Kaz Tanahashi tradition is translated as actualizing the fundamental point. So koan means these old stories, but also has this meaning, particularly for Dogen, of complete reality, the fundamental point, the truth. Nishijima Roshi translates it as the universe. So the Genjo Koan is the realized universe.
Well, where does he put the word universe?
As fundamental point, or koan. I think this is a beautiful sentence in itself. Like soku, for his commentary on this very, or immediacy, here and now, immediacy or here and now is the fundamental point which does not wait for actualization. It's the koan which does not wait for genjo. Which is, again, that's what immediacy is. That's what here and now, and again, this is all referring back to mind here and now, immediate mind itself, is the fundamental truth, is the universe itself as it is, which does not wait for actualization. Even though Dogen talks about the practice of Genjo Koan, of actualizing the fundamental point, is like the practice. Here we're talking about immediacy is the fundamental point which doesn't have to wait for some actualization. It's immediately realized. In other places where Dogen talks about the koan being genjoed, it's like it could be also translated as the koan is realized. In fact, this morning in the Fukan Zazengi, I think has this phrase too. It appears all over the place. Think, well, how does it go there? is itself. It's kind of nice to know that, to know this part here, that the Genjo Kōan is in the Fukan Zazen Gyutsu for the next time we're chanting it. I think it's the part about it is the manifestation of ultimate reality. So the Zazen I speak of is not learning meditation. It is simply the Dharma gate of repose and bliss, the practice realization of totally culminated enlightenment. It is the manifestation of ultimate reality. Or it could be translated as, it is the koan solved. Like the, in terms of looking at the koan, and particularly in this place when you're talking about meditation, because there was koan meditation going on, where the meditation is to try to solve a koan, come to some resolution about a story. So, but in Dogen's practice realization of totally culminated enlightenment, it is the koan solved from the very beginning. Doesn't wait for solving. The koan is solved. Or the ultimate reality is by its own nature manifest. So this is the fundamental point, which does not wait for actualization. It does not avoid being decomposed, or it does not avoid destruction, in another translation. Which, again, I think we could take as referring to emptiness. Even though it's the fundamental point, it's that doesn't wait for actualization. It's fundamental reality, but it doesn't avoid decomposition into complete ungraspability. In itself, now the word itself here is translation of ze. Butsu soku ze. Itself, there are three realms. There is no walking away. Itself is not merely mind only. So this is another, he's doing these various things, taking these kind of classic phrases and kind of splitting them up. So Dogen has another fascicle besides Genjo Koan called Sangai Yuishin, which means the three realms are only mind. Three worlds are mind only, which is a quote from the Flower Ornament Sutra, the Avatamsaka Sutra, and which he wrote, I think, after this. He wrote that fascicle after this one, but it was a popular phrase from the Avatamsaka Sutra that the three realms are only mind. So here he's saying, in itself, or it, you know, usually we've been translating ze as just is. This very mind is Buddha. So you could say is means the three realms. Is like, to be. It's something, it's not to not be. So is the three realms, which we talked about some other day, the realm of desire, form, and the formless realm. It's the entire world of samsara. It's just, a Buddhist traditional way of talking about the whole world. We could just say the whole world, but, the three realms. There is the whole world. There is the three realms. There's no walking away. And is itself is not merely mind only. So it's the three realms. It's not walking away, and it's not merely mind only, which is
also existence.
Yeah, existence. I think we could say something like existence. Yeah. This translation says this. Yeah. Here they say he likes to use this word concrete. This concrete triple world exists. It is neither receding nor appearing, and it is not just mind. So it's basically, I mean, it's structured like it's just two negatives. It's not, there's the three realms. There's not walking away, and it's not mind only. So it's, it's a little funny, and in some ways I think if I was Dogen, I don't know if I would have chosen the sentence, because it's not mind only. He says the three worlds are mind only. So he's playing with something subtle here, and you can take it up on your own as far as this is being not mind only. Like, maybe it's just bringing forth the proposition that in the phenomenal world, even though we say is mind only, here he's saying it's not mind only. I mean, it could mean it's the emptiness of mind only, or it could mean that, like, let's not just brush it off as mind only. When we're clarifying this particular character is, let's, the world of form. When form is form, form is form, and emptiness is another topic. So mind is the last character, shin, soku shin zebutsu. Mind is a wall. It's not stained by muddy water, and it's not created or made. And I don't know if, if this is playing with Bodhidharma's mind like a wall. As you may have heard this saying of Bodhidharma to Huayca, which was that his instruction, meditation instruction to his disciple was, outside have no involvements with, you could say, the world external to mind. Inside, no coughing or sighing in the mind. So kind of outside the mind, no involvements in what seems to be the appearances of the external world. Inside the mind, no coughing or sighing, like internal stuckness, internal hesitation, and there's the external world is really all just mind. Even that's too much. Sighing. Outside, no involvements. Inside, no coughing or sighing in the mind. With the mind like a wall, you enter the way. And Bodhidharma was the founder of facing the wall, which is why we still face the wall in Zazen, sitting in his cave. And it's a potent image, I think, to, on multiple levels. Both, turning away from the external world and facing the wall, like the impenetrable wall of reality that is ungraspable. The ungraspable wall, it's like the gateless barrier. Mind is a wall. It's not stained by muddy water. It's not created. So mind is something free of defilements.
So there you go. He's coming back to this defilements question. That's what I... So the state...
Muddy water.
So defilements... So suddenly I'm confused about this. I thought he was saying earlier that Earth, or I guess it was Huizong, mm-hmm. who was saying defilements by their nature drop off.
Mm-hmm.
And then here's Dogen sort of echoing that, saying mm-hmm. The mind or the wall is not stained.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's not defilements aren't there.
Right.
Don't exist.
Mm-hmm. It's just by their own nature.
They don't leave a mark.
Yeah, they don't leave a mark. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They don't leave a mark by their own nature.
By their own nature.
By
the nature of defilements. Not since I'm reading this as the nature of mind, it is not stained. But you're saying the nature of defilements is that they don't leave a mark. They drop off. I guess it would have to be both.
I think it is referring to mind. The mind is not stained, but I mean muddy water is kind of like defilements. And the mind is not created. The mind is not stained by muddy water. It washes off by its own accord. And, you know, defilements dropping off of their own accord still could sound like means like they go away. But as I understand, dropping off in the sense is that right in the midst of defilements, of the appearance of defilements, defilements will continue to appear even when they don't seem like we're really caught up in greed and hate and so on. Just, you know, the defilements of feeling like we're sitting in a room is slightly defiled. It's a dualistic view of self and environment. But that defilement and all defilements are dropped off by their own nature, but right in the midst of their appearance. So again, thinking of Nagarjuna, everything is completely empty of independent existence, and yet there's the continuous appearance of the world arising dependent on conditions. There's dependently arisen mere appearance of defilement, but it's merely appearance. But the appearance may continue to appear. As we're sitting, various thoughts and unpleasant thoughts and pleasant thoughts and all kinds of commentary on ourself and others and our life and the world will continue to arise and cease. But in Zazen we can open more and more to that all of that is merely appearance dependent on conditions. I mean, where the conditions of this human mind are such that stuff is going to keep appearing. But then is there some, even without directly perceiving the emptiness, can we be, as Shrenika was in the end, a faith follower, a trusting mind that actually opens more and more to trusting that right in the midst of the appearance of defilement, we have some trust through our examination and through the blessings of the Buddhas and ancestors that actually such appearing defilements are by nature dropped off, by nature empty, by nature ungraspable. Even while in the very midst of seemingly being very graspable. Dropping off doesn't mean disappearing from disappearing, still appearing, but merely appearing. Same with dropping off body and mind doesn't mean that like the body literally like disappears. In the Dogen movie, which I still feel like sometime we're gonna have to do a Zen Center screening. It's Dogen's Life movie. Came out about a year ago. It's pretty good. They go through many details of his life, but they add in some funny things too. But they have the moment of there is a there's a prostitute involved who doesn't actually appear in Dogen's story, as far as I know, but becomes his disciple. There's the moment of dropping off body and mind, of course. It's got to be one of the highlights of the film. And I think they show him something like he's like sitting zazen and he starts like rising off his cushion and like floats at the ceiling. It's like some special effects.
I don't like it.
And I think, you know. No. Because what would be so great about floating out the roof when you could be actually dropping off body and mind on a cushion? Yes?
Well, I'm getting this idea that this mind that is Buddha, or this mind that's a wall, is playing this function of reminding us about emptiness, or reminding us about the absolute.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with all of our tendency to reify delusions and negotiate delusions with our mind, which, you know, which we think, which we're kind of proud of, and how clever
yes.
we can be.
Mm-hmm. We can create this whole world. This appearing world.
But this mind that's Buddha, or that's like a wall, kind of just reminds us of our, you know, Buddha nature, or deeper nature, or emptiness, or, you know, all the terms that we've been discussing.
Yeah, it's a reminder, and it's words, many, many, many different words from all different angles, and that's what we do in these talks is talk and play with words, and yet that's the beauty, I think, of this image of the woman calling her servant in words, little Jade, and yet she's pointing to something that has nothing to do with the words. In this case, we might think, well, it has something to do with the words, but, you know, in the end, it's actually, like, far beyond the words. And yet, as you say, words are what we use for a mind that uses words, that uses words to create delusion. We use words to... not exactly uncreate the delusion, but drop off the, or see the dropped off nature of delusion. Dogen goes on, study thoroughly, and this is this term, sankyu, that again Dogen uses again and again throughout the Shobogenzo, thoroughly study, investigate completely,
penetrate.
Yeah, maybe thoroughly penetrate. San is like study or investigate, and Q is like thoroughly, completely, you know, exhaustively. And just the fact that he uses this term, thoroughly investigate, over and over is a demonstration of how Dogen is not just into like, you know, quiet sitting with no thinking going on at all. And sometimes he might be accused of like, there's no, you know, insight going on here. There's no, there's nothing but just let go of all thought continuously all the time, nothing but that. But again and again, he's saying, thoroughly investigate, study thoroughly these various points again and again. This is, you could say, the insight meditation of Dogen. And what to study thoroughly in this case? Mind itself is Buddha. And then basically he has five different phrases where he uses just the same four characters but in all different orders. And just to play with them. So mind itself is Buddha. Mind is Buddha itself. Buddha is itself the mind. Mind is itself is. Buddha is itself is. And, you know, you can see it with the characters. It's just, each one has a different nuance. And I think by actually, you know, it's a little bit like he's having fun here, but I think to actually do that, to actually take up each phrase and look at it from a different angle, the mind starts focusing in more and more on this phrase, mind itself is Buddha.
Where's the butsu in the mind is itself is?
Yeah, you know, actually this translation is a little bit off. I can. So Nishijin, because they actually do all have the four characters. So he says here, we realize in practice, mind here and now is Buddha. Mind which is Buddha is this. Buddha actually is just the mind. Mind and Buddha here and now is right. And this Buddha mind is here and now. And to do it maybe kind of like literally, it would be like, this very mind is Buddha. Mind, this very Buddha is. Buddha, this very is mind. You know, Buddha immediately is mind. Immediately mind, Buddha is. And is Buddha mind here and now, or immediately.
What was the second to the last one?
Immediately. Mind Buddha is. And that's how Nishijima did it, kind of like hyphenization, mind Buddha, and Buddha mind is. By studying thoroughly in this way and taking up mind itself as Buddha, you authentically transmit it to mind itself as Buddha. It has been authentically transmitted until today. So Dogen also likes to bring up this idea of true transmission, authentic transmission. He was very into the only a Buddha and a Buddha transmission of mind, and but in this case, studying thoroughly in this way, taking up mind itself as Buddha, you authentically transmit mind itself is Buddha to mind itself is Buddha. It's not like there's no people involved here. Or you could say mind itself is Buddha is like a Buddha, and transmitted to mind itself is Buddha is another Buddha. But maybe he just wants to get this issue of true transmission in here, but and using this phrase, mind itself is Buddha, is transmitted to this mind itself is Buddha, which is transmitted to that mind itself is Buddha, which is transmitted to this mind itself is Buddha, endlessly.
Is he not saying here that the mind itself is Buddha is you authentically transmit it to itself?
You authentically transmit it.
But the mind itself.
Yeah,
it. To the mind itself.
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
Hard to get a grip on this one, which is...
If you start imagining dropping away body and mind, speaking to dropping away body and mind, you're sort of, you know, without physical form, or in the realm of dropping away body and mind, that's how I like exchange.
In Zen, we have this phrase, mind-to-mind transmission.
Right.
And he might be playing with that, too, because mind is the issue here. So
the only thing transmitted to mind is mind.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he's... And mm-hmm.
But in this case, it's clarifying that mind itself as Buddha is transmitted to mind itself as Buddha, which you could say is implied in just mind-to-mind transmission, but it's bringing in the phrase... It's what?
It's all equal signs.
Yeah, it's all equal signs.
So what is transmitted then?
Mind itself
emptiness.
Is Buddha.
Emptiness.
Well, in this case, mind itself is Buddha.
I'm asking you because you should be the expert today. Because tomorrow you're leaving.
Ah, mind itself is Buddha.
You might have to follow a little bit about this.
Well, luckily, I'm not actually involved.
You're not actually involved?
I'm not involved.
In the transmission?
No, mind itself is Buddha.
Mind itself is Buddha, right?
It's transmitting to mind itself as Buddha. And, you know, maybe I'll get to watch from the sideline. If I'm lucky.
Okay, you wait.
So, yes?
It almost seems, I mean, to me somehow this really vibrates with experiences I've had in Dokusan, particularly where it's, you know, just suddenly there's this opening between two, you know, and it's something that you can't, it's very hard to express in words, but yet somehow that's what I, you know, what I feel here, but.
Mm.
You know, that, you know, because words don't, you know, these are things mm-hmm. that words don't fit too well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so to get, you know, it's an experiential thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a resonance.
Yeah. And so somehow this resonates with things that I've had brief experiences of and glimpses of.
Hmm. And when you look back at that time, could you now see it in the context of this very mind is Buddha?
Yes.
I think that's yeah, many different terms, but you know, today's phrase is mind itself is Buddha. So
that's a broken axle one.
Yeah. And it doesn't seems like such moments don't serve any particular function, do they? Isn't it more like there's just communion for the sake of communion?
Buddha.
Yeah, does Buddha serve any particular function? You know, in Buddha's naturally nirvanic quality, or is it just Buddha's celebrating being Buddha?
Yes.
I mean, Buddha does appear in the world for one great cause and condition. To help beings enter the way, it is said also. It sounds functional. And yet, is the even in that case, is the way that Buddha helps beings enter the way, is that but, could that be in the end just by being Buddha? And could being Buddha in the end just be this very mind, nothing extra or lacking, not doing anything about anything appearing. finish this section. The mind that has been authentically transmitted is one mind is all things, all dharmas. All things are one mind. Thus, an ancient teacher said, if you realize this mind, there's not an inch of land left on earth. So one mind is all things are one mind. So tomorrow, bring up Huangbo's one mind teaching and see how it's very much in accord with Dogen's teaching here. And yet, yet I think Huangbo is one who definitely flirts with the view of Seneca. He gets dangerously close by proposing this one mind that's that it is all Buddhas and all sentient beings. We'll bring that up tomorrow. But the an ancient teacher said, if you realize this mind, there's not an inch of land left on earth. And you might recall in the Dogen's comments on the Bodhisattva precepts, his comment on not speaking of others' faults, not praising self and belittling others, or not praising self at the expense of others. Dogen's comment is, Buddhism ancestors realize complete emptiness and the great earth, manifesting the great body in emptiness, there is no inside or outside. Manifesting the Dharma body on earth, there is not an inch of land. Which is the same phrase that's apparently an ancient Chinese ancestor says, if you realize the mind, on earth there is not an inch of land. And so, just, you know, making this connection here, realizing the mind that is itself Buddha, we could deduce that one effect of this is that we would not praise self and belittle others. Because everything is equal. And another way to see, on earth there's not an inch of land, sounds like, well, because it's all empty. But there's not an inch of land left on earth. So one footnote says this could also mean that like an inch of like earth, like a soil, say you have a little like pile, an inch long piece of soil on the earth, it's like, actually it's not just an inch of soil, it's like completely non-separate and non-dual with the earth. This inch of soil is not like some separate thing and then there's the earth there. It's part of the earth, the inch of soil on the earth. So, you know, I'd always heard it as on the earth, there's not an inch of land, like you can't find anything at all there. But a slight difference is on earth, you see this little inch of soil that's already there on the earth, but it's not really some separate inch. Does that make sense? And which I think reveals a little bit more of why Dogen might have chosen that for praising self at the expense of others. It's like this little self of me, little inch of me on the land of all others, for example, to say like, well, this inch is like, is really cool, it's me here, and but actually I'm just like a part of the whole earth. There's no difference, there's no separation between self and others, and thus all this talk about emptiness when practicing that precept, self and others, no difference. And so that's a nice practice connection to precepts as we close this day. This mind itself is Buddha would help us to practice non-separation and non self-elevation and non-other judgment. And lastly, Know that when you realize this mind, the entire sky collapses and the whole earth explodes. Or if you realize this mind, the earth raises its surface by 3 inches. I'm not going to touch that one. This is where I think Dogen is even going beyond having fun. He's just letting his mind as Buddha run wild. Anything else to bring up before the last section of this that we get into tomorrow? May all beings realize this very mind as Buddha and thus drop off any self-praise and belittling others. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's ways unsurpassable. I vow to become it.